Tonight on the Worldview Weekend Hour, White House Reds Part 2 with Trevor Loudon. He's in studio. It's subtitled Communist, Socialist, and Security Risk, Running for the U.S. Presidency in 2020. And my friends, whether you're watching this program in the far future or just in the last few days since it was filmed, these issues are not going away. The ideas, ideologies, and organizations have been trying to carry out a revolution in America for a very long time. I don't care how far in the future you're watching this show, this content is relevant now and years from now. The Worldview Weekend Hour begins right now.
This is WVW, Broadcast Network News and Commentary, with Brannon House.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're with us. Trevor Loudon is back in studio with us. What a first program we had, Trevor. Thank you for being with us. This brand new book just came
Always
out today.
Always a pleasure, Brannon.
Just came out today. And we got you in studio all day long and filming a ton of shows.
Great place to launch it, I have to say.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. We want people to get a copy. I think this is one of the most important books you could read in 2020. I spent many hours yesterday, before he brought me the copy this morning, he sent me the PDF. And I spent a lot of time yesterday reading through this book and marking it up. And in our first program, we didn't even get out of the introduction of the book. That was just the setting the stage for what we wanted to talk about. In our last program, and by the way, you can get his book at Amazon or on his website, and we have his website under his name, but again, go ahead and verbally give your website.
Well, just trevorloudon.com. So it's pretty simple, and that Loudon is L-O-U-D-O-N. So trevorloudon.com. If you order the book on from me, I can get get an autographed copy. So that gives you a little bit more insight.
Well, I love having my books in my library autographed as he did for me, so I would suggest you do that. All right. Now, when we finished up our last program, Program 1, we finished up talking about how the socialists, neo-Marxists, cultural Marxists, were looking to do many things, including flip the churches in the South. They're coming after the South. We talked specifically in Program 1 about them going after Georgia and Florida. We talked about the fact that Andrew Gillum, who ran for governor in Florida and lost in November 2018, lost by only about 32,000 votes, folks. They almost elected a Marxist in Florida shy of 32,000 votes in November 2018. We talked about Stacey Abrams, another, he says, cultural Marxist, neo-Marxist, and I agree with him. She lost becoming governor of the state of Georgia in November 2008. She lost by right around 50,000 votes. Folks, that's how close they are to taking over Georgia and Florida, which would mean kiss the presidency goodbye when it comes to the Electoral College. We also concluded talking about a guy by the name of Cone, James Cone, and who promoted liberation theology, which I call Marxianity. Marxism merged with Christianity is called Marxianity. I wrote about that in my book that came out in November 2018. But it's also known as liberation theology. Well, this guy, Cone, is known as the father of black liberation theology. There's liberation theology, and then there's black liberation theology. And Cone is the father of black liberation theology. He was teaching at the school up there in New York that was funded by the Rockefellers. What was the name of that school? It'll come to me in a minute. But he was teaching at the university, the seminary, Union.
Union Theological Seminary.
And funded by the Rockefellers. And he's the father of black liberation theology. He's now dead. But he greatly influenced a guy by the name of Walter Strickland, who was written about, Cone and Strickland were written about, in the New York Times, April 2019. New York Times, April 2019. We've quoted from it extensively here in our broadcast over the last year. And in that article, Walter Strickland, who teaches at Southeastern, Danny Aiken Seminary, correct?
Yep.
He talks about how he was going around speaking at all these Southern Baptist churches to try to help these churches deal with their perceived racism. And their perceived racism was due to the fact that some of their folks had supported Donald Trump and that white evangelicals are supporting Trump. Therefore, we got to deal with this perceived racism because they were supporting some of Donald Trump's policies like opposing globalism, telling the United Nations Education, Scientific, Cultural Organization, UNESCO, to go pound sand, telling Planned Parenthood, no thank you, telling the World Court, go pound sand, borders, security, vetting people coming from Islamic nations, all of that. That's racist stuff.
Yeah, that's radical racist stuff.
And so to counter that, because so many white evangelicals supported Trump, Strickland was going around speaking at a lot of Southern Baptist churches trying to help them with their, racism problem, I apparently believe?
Yeah, because if you believe in the free market system, if you believe in traditional Christianity, if you are, especially if you're white, you're automatically racist. And you may not know you're racist. You might be married to a person of a different race. You might have different race children. But if you're a white Christian, believe in freedom, believe in free markets, you are a racist according to their standard. So we don't, you know, we understand racism as when you have an irrational prejudice against somebody because of the color of their skin. No, to a Marxist, racism is all about the societal structures. If you're part of the dominant structure, you are automatically racist. You can only be racist if you're part of the dominant structure. So you can be a black guy that belongs to the Nation of Islam and hates Jews or hates whites, but you're not racist because you're not part of the dominant structure.
But what if your name is Clarence Thomas, you're black American, and your wife is white, and she works in the White House, which I think she does, doing some stuff for President Trump's administration, but you hold to the worldview of Clarence Thomas, would Clarence Thomas be a racist?
Well, he'd be an Uncle Tom. He'd be a sellout. He can't quite, well, he would be a racist. He'd be a, he'd sort of be an honorary white because he's adopted the values of the ruling white capitalist Christian
I've actually heard
system.
Them referred to as Oreos.
Oreos, yeah, the sort of
this
half
is what,
black, half white.
This
yeah.
is this
the left is so
black
racist.
On the outside, white on the inside.
Yeah, yeah.
That is what actually teachers in the Memphis area have told me that children will call each other if they work hard and try in school and make good grades. You're trying to be white. You're an Oreo. You're black on the outside, but you're white on the inside. So these are the racist terms they use with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
If you desire to be a successful capitalist American that works hard and improves your lot in life.
And those terms and attitudes are reinforced by the left. The left has been propagandizing the black communities in this country for many years to accept that they will never compete in the white system, they will never rise, that traditional Christianity is not for them. That the free market system will destroy them, that the whole society is racist against them. They got to stick together, vote socialist, and hate whitey. That's basically what they are taught, you know, and this is what critical race theory teaches.
And the Southern Baptist Convention in their convention in Alabama in 2019 affirmed Resolution 9, which affirmed critical race theory, which is cultural Marxism, which says that the source of all suffering and oppression is basically white Christianity. And as stupid as they are, the Southern Baptist Convention, they affirmed Marxism through Resolution 9 at their convention.
Yeah.
Shocking to believe, but it is true.
The most conservative, one of the most orthodox Bible-believing denominations in the country is now adopted Marxism. So what do you think all the rest of the churches are doing? You know, what are the rest of the evangelical community doing? The mainstream churches have been promoting this stuff for decades now.
It's the evangelical churches they've hijacked.
Yeah, because they vote for Trump. They vote for Reagan. We got to stop
That's the
this.
Margin of victory is the evangelicals.
Yeah, we got to, and they have realized if they're not going to have any more Trumps or any more Reagans, they got to get on top of the evangelical community and either neutralize them so they don't vote or actually shift them to the left. And they're working on both those strategies right now.
And that's why I wrote the book Marxianity. Sorry, don't mean to be involved in shameless self-promotion, but I didn't write this book for it to sit on a shelf or in a, you know, a warehouse. That's why I wrote this book. Came out in March, November 2018, Marxianity, Marxism and Christianity Merge, because this is what your mainstream evangelicals are doing. Your mainline, as you said, have been doing it for 100 plus years. This is what your modern day evangelicals are doing now. One example would be go to the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable website, yep. and which is being funded by George Soros, according to numerous sources.
Yes.
No borders, open society, bring all these illegal immigrants in here, get them voting so they can win every progressive election. And we know that because in the documentary Sabotage, we have an audio, a video of Alicia Medina saying, if we can get these 20 plus million immigrants here in America to vote, we'll win every progressive election from now on. And by that, he means socialist. And Alicia Medina is the head of the SEIU.
Yeah, and a member of Democratic Socialists of America and Obama's informal immigration advisor. You know,
look, and so, by the way, who is helping Alicia Medina then get these folks amnesty so they can vote? Evangelical Christians. If you go to the Evangelical Immigration Roundtable, you'll see that the heads and former heads of some of the biggest church denominations in America have signed on to this, including it was founded in part by Russell Moore of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah. They're right on board with this. And you know, they sell you the idea that to be Christian, you have to welcome anybody who wants to come into this country, legal or not. Anybody who jumps the border, it's an unchristian thing to do to turn them back. Well, have they ever read the Old Testament? Did the Israelites put up borders every now and then to save themselves,
yes.
preserve their nation?
Yeah.
The Old Testament is a lot about national security.
And they had to eat certain ways, dress in funny ways, deliberately to keep them from becoming immersed into the culture and paganism of other nations to preserve the Jewish line.
Yeah. Look, if we don't preserve America, America is the only thing that's really safeguarding Christianity around the world today.
Mm.
That's really, if America is lost, Christianity will be lost as well.
Mm.
You know, except there will always be little pockets here or there. But, you know, if America's lost, how many missionaries are going to go overseas?
Mm.
How many churches are going to be built overseas?
What about Christian radio in America?
Yeah.
If these guys win, what is the fairness doctrine and hate crime law is going to do to Christian radio and television?
Yeah, they're going to shut you down.
What about the internet?
Well, the same thing. They're going to use, they're already working and deplatforming people through hate, so-called hate legislation now. Hate speech laws came out of the Maoist left. They're a communist Chinese invention. You know, the American Constitution was founded on the First Amendment. You have a right to say whatever you like, no matter how offensive it is, no matter who it upsets, no matter who is, and this is in religion, this is in politics, anything. Well, now they're bringing in hate speech laws, which means basically if you offend a certain group, you're committing a criminal act. Just offending them. You know, you imagine had Martin Luther not been able to offend the Catholic Church. You imagine had George Washington not been allowed to offend King George III. You imagine had Abraham Lincoln not been able to offend the Confederacy. You know, you've got, look, progress is built on people saying what is true or, you know, saying things that offend people,
for instance,
that upset people.
Billy Graham used to pack out football stadiums all over America and the world, but certainly here in America. He used to pack out football stadiums.
Mm.
Billy Graham. What was Billy Graham preaching? He was preaching a narrow way. John 14:6, Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's what Billy Graham was preaching. That is the most intolerant, bigoted thing one can say today, that salvation is exclusive, not inclusive, that it's exclusive through Christ alone. And so what I'm saying is, there was a time in America that a preacher by the name of Billy Graham was packing out football stadiums, and towns and states and elected officials loved it when he would come to town, and churches of all stripes would get behind it. Today, even that concept and idea is shunned as being racist and intolerant and bigoted.
Look, Billy Graham would be shut down, would be deplatformed today.
If he were starting out
today. He wouldn't be able to get a football stadium.
He wouldn't be Billy Graham. There would be no Billy Graham
no,
if he were starting today.
There wouldn't be able to, and how many Christians brought to the faith by Billy Graham? You'd say millions around the world. That he would be deplatformed today. He wouldn't be able to hire a football stadium for a start. He'd be
look
far
how they treat
too
his son.
Intolerant.
Look how they treat his son, Franklin Graham.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're right. So the point we're making is you can see what was once celebrated and embraced by the culture is, hey, this is a good thing, Christianity and biblical Judeo-Christian ideas. Now today wouldn't even get off the ground.
No, it wouldn't. You know, the only Christianity, if these people win, the only Christianity that will exist will be a sort of hybrid Marxist Christianity that will not be exclusive. It has to accept anybody, no matter how you sin, no matter what you do. The Old Testament will be basically abolished. It will all be this false love, welcome everybody, doesn't matter what you do. Smoke dope all week long, that's fine. You know, live in sin, that's fine, that's all right. As long as you fight against global warming and welcome refugees from the third world and vote progressive, your Christian church will be able to continue. It'll have a cross on the door, maybe, but it won't be anything like the Christianity you grew up with. Now remember, in before World War II, the Nazis came along, and the German churches were the only people who had the numbers and the moral authority to stop them. Did they do that?
No.
No, they put swastikas in their churches. They became Nazi Christians, and they were allowed to continue as long as they supported the government and turned a blind eye while Hitler slaughtered the Jewish communities of their country. They could still exist.
He's right. I deal with it in my book, The Coming Religious Reich, Reich meaning Empire Kingdom, and they dissolved their denominations. The German Christians, as they were called, dissolved their denominations and united under the Reich bishop handpicked by Adolf Hitler. His name was Mueller. And I can show you pictures, and I have showed this TV audience pictures, of their denomination meetings, Baptist meetings, Reformed meetings, Calvinist meetings, Calvinist denominations, Lutheran groups, with the swastika and the cross getting equal play. Baptizing children in front of a Nazi flag. Swearing their young men into the service in the church to the SS. Taking down the cross and putting up the swastika. Removing the Bible and putting onto the altar Mein Kampf. I mean, after all, the anti-Semitism of Luther was so strong that he was quoted three times in Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler. We've been here before. It doesn't work out too well, does it? Now, in our last program, we did finish talking.
And who was it that solved that problem? It was hundreds of thousands of young American Christian boys.
That went off to war.
Who went off to war.
Fought and died.
And fought and died for it, to fix it. Mm-hmm. Because the German Christians, rather than stand for what they believed in, compromised. And that led directly to World War II and 20 million deaths and carnage like we've never seen before. Mm. Well, American Christians are in the same position today. Do they stand for what's right, or do they go along to get along? And if they go along to get along, we are heading for some grief, some real grief.
In our last program, we stopped, as I said, by talking about Walter Strickland in the New York Times article, April 2019, where he is going around speaking to all these Southern Baptist churches trying to help them with their perceived racism problem because some of them support Trump. And he said, he quotes Cone, the father of black liberation theology, but he said in the article he doesn't tell them who he's quoting. And this is part of the problem. This is an information war. You state openly in your book that this is an information war. I'm so glad you said that, because we've been saying here for a long time that I am more and more impressed upon the fact that this is a brainwashing operation. This is an information war, psychological warfare, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same thing. This is an information war. Most people don't have the information, and they're being lied to, and what is being quoted to them, they're not being told who is the source and what is the worldview, just as we're not being told what is the worldview of the presidential candidates. What is the worldview of Biden? What is the worldview of Tulsi Gabbard? What is the worldview of any of these people? Bernie Sanders, we know his worldview, but what is the worldview of the organization?
No, we don't, because he says he's a socialist, but he is a full-on communist.
Ah.
So even honest Bernie is not telling the truth.
And so it's an information warfare. That's why we don't know the truth. The media is helping cover.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of the media, here's an article you wrote, Donna Brazile, why would Fox News hire a socialist? So while we're trying to put out the truth, Fox News has got her on set discounting and calling crazy talk anything we try to point out, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So you know, Fox News is only barely on our side. It's on our side some of the time, but really it's independent media like you that people have to turn to. But I just want to, you talked about information, and it reminded me of, there's this famous film clip, you've seen it, Michelle Higgins speaking at a conservative evangelical youth conference in St. Louis, Missouri in 2015. And she gets up in front of these young kids, and because it's the Midwest, they're mostly white, and she tells them that the thing God wants them to do more than anything else is to end white privilege. This is apparently the 11th commandment that got missed off somehow, right? So they're all fired up, these young kids, you know, they want to be good Christians. They're all out there ending white privilege. They might be on food stamps, but they've, you know, apparently because they're white, they have white privilege. Well, what they don't say is that Michelle Higgins is a member, she's a pastor, but she's a member of the Organization for Black Struggle, which is a front for the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, the pro-Chinese communist group that gave us the Black Lives Matter movement.
When did that group start? Socialist Road.
Freedom Road Socialist Organization started in the 80s, but it came out of the Maoist movement of the 60s.
When you say Maoist, to those who may know, you're referring to the communist leader of Mao.
Yeah, Mao Zedong. So it was the radical anti-Vietnam War movement, the Weather Underground, Students for a Democratic Society.
Weather Underground,
Revolutionary
Bill Ayers.
Bill Ayers. They were Maoist. They believed in the Chinese version of communism. So Freedom Road Socialist Organization pulled all the remnants of that movement together into one group called Freedom Road Socialist Organization. They are the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, you can't tell me that Black Lives Matter hasn't had some impact around America.
Yes.
But who knows, it's a communist, completely communist operation.
Founded by what, two or three communist women, right?
Yeah, three. Patrice Couleurs, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi.
Feminist all, and sexuality is even in question,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, two of them are lesbian, but at least two of them. But they are Marxists. They're all Marxists, and they're all affiliated with the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, which Michelle Higgins is also associated with, but she's a pastor telling young white Christians that the thing they have to do is to end white privilege. This is critical race theory. And these young kids are going, wow, you know, they want to be a good Christian. So their whole mission now is, instead of going overseas to start a missionary or become a pastor, they're all fired up about ending white privilege.
And to do that, they become community.
Marxism.
To do that, they become community organizers.
Yeah, they can, or activist pastors or whatever. But they will be leading the church in 5 or 10 years' time.
They're turning our churches into community organizations.
Yeah.
They're not preaching the gospel in the Bible. They're preaching a social gospel. They're getting under contract with local, state, and federal governments. Again, I hate to say it, but in my book, Marxianity, I predicted that the churches in America, many, many, many of them, would stop preaching a gospel. They'll tell you they're preaching, like, oh, this is for the gospel. This is a gospel issue. That's all window dressing. They can't. They cannot get a contract with local, state, and federal government to get government money to be a community organization that offers social services in the name of Jesus for the gospel, which is baloney. They can't do that if they preach the real gospel or give out Bibles or a tract. It's illegal. And so when you talk about these different groups that are bringing all these illegal immigrants in here, under Obama, we were talking about all these so-called Christian nonprofits that were getting billions of dollars to bring illegal immigrants in here. This is the same thing going on now, and we have proof, and we've done shows, and I predicted it in the book Marxianity, and we're going to do more, that the Southern Baptist Convention and other churches and church denominations are turning their churches into social service centers, yeah, opening social service centers, claiming they're doing inner city gospel work, but they're getting contracts from local, state, and federal government to be community organizations as middlemen, carrying out social services, redistribution of wealth, immigration programs to bring more illegals in, all in the name of Christianity, the gospel, but it's all socialism masquerading as Christianity, why I call Marxianity, correct?
They are becoming Nazi churches.
Say that one more time.
They are becoming Nazi churches.
Why do you say that?
Because they are going along with the dominant ideology of the day, of the government ideology.
And Nazism was about national socialism.
Yeah. And see, these people are becoming they're becoming what happened to the German churches in the 30s. They're adopting the political ideology of the day. They're abandoning their true mission, and they're getting lots of money, and they're compromising, and they're still telling people they're Christian.
They're lying.
They're lying. See, you know, what do communist revolutionaries want? They want three things. They want money, they want influence, and they want respectability. Now, where are you going to get that in America? You've got to go for the churches, right? Because they have money, they have influence, and they have respectability. If a pastor says it, people will listen.
Particularly here in the South.
Yeah, particularly in the South. So if you want to influence large numbers of the populace, you get into the churches.
And on top
you
of that,
you bring your communist message into the church.
And on top of that, these so-called churches have figured out if they want to make a bunch of money, they need to get on the local, state, and federal government payroll as middleman for social services.
Yeah. I mean, church is taking money from the government, either get them to stop or get out of that church.
In my book, Marxianity, what stumbled me onto this was I typed into a search engine, churches make millions of dollars on the government. And up popped an article from Forbes magazine that stated that over 62% of Catholic Charities' budget in America, Catholic Charities, over 62% of their budget came from local, state, and federal government. And I thought, well, wait a minute. All the so-called Protestant evangelical churches are doing is following the model of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So they're going to do the same thing, which is why they're all of a sudden into the Rick Warren model of the three-legged stool, government, corporations, and the private sector. Government, corporations, and the social sector, i.e. churches.
Yeah, communitarianism.
That's communitarianism, which the late Henry Lamb called communism light.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's exactly what it is.
Communitarianism, or the third way.
Well, Rick Warren, who's a pioneer of this, you know, he used to be involved with SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, which was a communist Maoist organization.
I reported that in my book, Grave Influence. And I, to this day, cannot find anywhere where he ever denounced his membership. Can you?
No.
So I want you to explain again. Rick Warren was a member. He told Time Magazine this.
Yeah.
That he was a member of SDS. Tell everybody what SDS is.
Well, SDS was Students for a Democratic Society. Walter Mao, a very prominent Christian too, was also an SDS. But Students for a Democratic Society was the anti-Vietnam War protest movement started by open socialists up in Michigan who were descended from the British Fabian Society. Mm-hmm. But in the anti-Vietnam War era, it became openly communist. It was Maoist, revolutionary communist. Most of the leading communists in this country got their roots in SDS. That was the big push in the 60s. It was the leadership of the student protest movement, the people who trashed Chicago during the Democratic Party convention then, because the Democrats were conservative then, you see. They supported the war on communism, so they had to be taken down. SDS led to the Weathermen, which was the terrorist group.
Over 30 bombings in the U.S.?
30 bombings. The Weathermen planned to bomb a military dance at Fort Dix in New Jersey, which would have killed dozens of servicemen and their dates, but the bomb exploded prematurely in a New York townhouse and killed three weathermen. But this is how evil they were. They were working with the Cubans, the Vietnamese, and the North Koreans, and the Chinese.
And that's all an offshoot of SDS.
SDS. And SDS itself gave rise to the progressive, Revolutionary Communist Party and Democratic Socialists of America and many of the revolutionary groups that we have in America today. And Rick Warren was part of that.
And we can find nowhere where he's ever condemned it. I haven't. In fact, we have a video of him that we show in Sabotage. We have a video where he says that the power of the campaign, he learned it from a former communist.
Is that right?
Yeah, I have him on video. He learned the power of the campaign to add people to your church. He learned it and how to bring converts from the communists. And he says, yeah, this former communist wrote this book on how the communists converted people. And you should get the book, Pastor. You should read it.
I think I know the one he's referring to. Yeah, exactly. But this is it. What happened, one of the big problems we have in the church now is in the 1970s, The Vietnam War was a big deal, and you had a lot of people opposed to it. A lot of people supported it because they wanted to stop communism in Asia. A lot of people backed by the Soviets spent more money on the American protest movement than they spent back in North Vietnam.
That's right.
Right? So you had a big war going on in America. Now, a lot of young Americans decided, am I going to get drafted and go and fight communism in Vietnam? Or am I going to go into the seminary and become a pastor and support and fight for communism within the churches?
Mm-hmm.
So you had a big influx of leftists who went into the churches in the 1970s. And they are now the people who are running the seminaries
and church denominations
today.
Broadcast outlets.
And these are the same people who went into media at that time and into the labor union movement as well. That's why you got a big the big confluence of the left. The same people who went into Hollywood too. But a lot of them got draft deferments to go into the seminaries. They went in the 60s and early 70s, and they became lead church leaders in the 90s and early 2000s, and then they trained their people to follow them. That's a large part of how the left infiltrated the churches. And you'll trace people who were active in SDS became very prominent theologians, very prominent seminary heads. And this is, they brought their socialism with them.
You said something that might shock people. You said, talked about how the USSR put so much money here into America.
Yeah.
Well, here is a quote. This is from the book Through the Eyes of the Enemy by Stanislav Lvov. And he says, quote, "What will be," this guy, by the way, was the highest ranking officer to defect from the USSR. He said, "What will be great surprise to the American people is that the GRU and KGB," obviously the GRU is the military intelligence side of the KGB, "had a larger budget for anti-war propaganda in the United States than it did for economic and military support for the Vietnamese. The anti-war propaganda cost the GRU more than $1 billion, but as history shows, it was a hugely successful campaign and well worth the cost. The anti-war sentiment created an incredible momentum that greatly weakened the U.S. military." So if we know that the USSR was pumping money into America to make sure that the communists won the Vietnam War by getting Americans to turn against the Vietnam War, and we know they pumped $1 billion, how many billions of dollars since then have they pumped into media, seminaries, colleges, nonprofits, the gospel coalition type groups, foundations that didn't funnel that money and launder that money and then spread it all around, yeah, if you will, clean it up and... Yeah. So you can't, why are some of these groups, by the way, why do they have their nonprofits now open in the Cayman Islands? We're finding documented proof from mainstream publications, secular publications, stating that some of these mainstream religious organizations are opening up their nonprofit chapters in the Cayman Islands. And nonprofits don't pay taxes. Why would you do that other than maybe to hide from the public where you're getting your money from?
That's exactly right. You know, you talked before, you know, and I make a point in my book, you know, say China, Russia, Cuba, are they going to get in a multi-billion dollar trade war with the US? Are they going to get into a shooting war with the US and risk defeat that it costs trillions of dollars? Or are they going to spend a few billion dollars supporting American communists, American churchmen, and American politicians to move the culture in their direction and to support political policies that favor them? Why do you think we have a nuclear deal with Iran? Because a whole bunch of your congressmen and senators are on the take for Iran. Why do we have Obamacare? Why do we have all these communist policies? Why did we have a steady defunding of the US military and a gutting of the US military to the point that Russia is now ahead of us in most areas? Because you had a group called the Council for a Livable World spending money, electing US senators, more than 200 of them, to basically vote for the destruction of the US military. This is a better deal for them. You know, we're an open society. We're not a police state here, so foreigners can easily influence our politicians, and they do it all the time.
All right, so my guest, just to reiterate, is Trevor Loudon. His book just came out today, the first copy of the book right here, and the first interview since the book came out. The book is called White House Reds, Communist, Socialist, and Security Risk Running for U.S. President 2020. Now, this show will be relevant years from now, regardless of what happens in November 2020, because of the groups we're talking about, the history we're talking about, the ideologies we're talking about. So, folks, this is relevant and will be for years to come. We're going to tell you now about a group he just mentioned, which I had never heard of until I sat down with the PDF, because you gave me the real copy today, but I sat down with the PDF for many hours yesterday, marked it up. I had never heard of this group till yesterday, Council for a Livable World. You just mentioned them. Hmm. And you said that they have helped to elect how many?
Over 200 U.S. senators.
Just U.S. senators alone?
Yeah, and about 300 congressmen.
All right. Well, what is the Council for a Livable World? When did it start and who started it?
Well, it started in 1962, so they've been at this for a long time. was started by a man called Leo Szilard. Now, he was Hungarian. He was a communist supporter in Hungary, left that country when the revolution was overthrown, came to the United States, was a nuclear physicist, and was a leading scientist on the Manhattan Project, the project that gave us the American atomic bomb. He was regarded as a massive security risk. The head of the project security, Groves, wanted to kick him out. There were many Soviet spies working, and that's how the Soviets got the bomb, by infiltrating that project. After the war, he was named as a Soviet agent by Pavel Sudoplatov, a former GRU officer who defected and wrote a book. And what he said was that Szilard and his friends, who had been spies for the Soviets, betrayed America to the Soviet Union, were disconnected from the KGB and told to set up peace groups that would work to disarm the United States, that would work to disarm your nuclear armaments, your conventional systems, to negotiate disadvantageous treaties with the Soviet Union, etc. So in 1962, Szilard sets up Council for a Livable World.
How do you say his name?
Szilard, S-Z-I-L-I-R-D. So Szilard, I pronounce it Szilard, maybe that's slightly incorrect, but Leo Szilard. So he set this group up, and the rationale was very simple. They gathered a whole bunch of money, and they decided in a small state, every state has two senators. If we focus on election races in small states, we can buy senators for a very low cost. You know, it doesn't cost much to elect a senator in Delaware or Montana.
Wait a minute. Delaware.
Delaware, yeah.
Joe
Biden.
Is that how Joe Biden got his
start? Joe Biden was one of the very first successes. Joe Biden in 1972 was a 29-year-old city councillor. And he decided to run for U.S. Senate against an incumbent Republican, four-term Republican with an 80% approval rating. How insane was that, right? But he was supported by the Council for a Livable World. They got $280,000 for him, which was a lot of money in 1972, I'll tell you, for a small state like Delaware. And that was organized by a man called Albert Gore Sr.,
Al Gore's father.
You might have heard of him. From Tennessee.
From Tennessee. Yeah.
His son invented global warming and the internet.
And the internet, right.
They're right. But Al Gore Sr. was the head at the time of the Council for a Livable World. And he picked up Biden and guided him through the process. Now, Al Gore Sr. was the protege of a man called Armand Hammer.
He's a communist.
Who was the leading Soviet agent of the early 20th century.
From which we get Armand Hammer, the baking soda, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Occidental Petroleum was his company. Armand Hammer was the man who kept the Bolshevik Revolution afloat. His father was a U.S. communist. He made billions of dollars trading with the Soviet Union. He was a Soviet agent of influence, yet he was Al Gore Sr.'s patron, also Al Gore's patron as well. But so Joe Biden owed his job to two Soviet agents, Leo Szilard and Al Gore Sr. Biden has done more to gut the U.S. military in his term of office than any other senator. He negotiated treaties with the Soviet Union, which gave them huge advantages. He fought Reagan all the time over his anti-communist policies in Latin America. And in 2012, I quote Biden. He talks about how, and a Council for a Livable World says two of our greatest successes. He said, this is what they say. They said, we back these senators and they don't forget us when we come calling for favors. And our two greatest successes were Joe Biden and Barack Obama. And he boasts in 2012 how the Council for a Livable World has been with him his entire career, and they helped him and Obama negotiate the New START Treaty with Russia. This has continued on after the fall of the wall, which gave huge advantages to Russia, to Moscow, and that basically President Trump has wiped because the Russians were cheating so much on it. So this is Joe Biden. He has done more damage to the U.S. military than any other politician in U.S. history.
And he got his start through the Council for a Livable World.
Not just his start, they were with him his entire career.
Listen to what he said from your book, page 12. I'm quoting from White Reds by Trevor Loudon. Page 12, he says, in October 2012, Biden made a two-minute video congratulating the Council for a Livable World on its 50th anniversary. Biden was very open about CLW's influence on both him and U.S. policy making. This is Joe Biden, presidential candidate. He said this, former U.S. senator, said this, former vice president, said this in 2012. Quote, this would have been when he was vice president.
Yep.
He said, quote, my ties to the council run long and deep, stretching way back to my first campaign for United States Senate. I'll never forget the faith you showed and the help you gave to a young man making a long shot for the United States Senate in 1972. Because of you, we won. That help was continued throughout my entire career, especially when I was chairman of the United States Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and it continues to this very day. My appreciation for your work has only grown over that period as we continue to work together on a wide range of projects, all aimed at reducing the danger of nuclear weapons. The insight, counsel, and support you provided me and my colleagues on Capitol Hill and the White House has contributed to landmark achievements from ratifying the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty and START to establishing a nuclear testing moratorium here at home, to the Chemical Weapons Convention, and to this very day, your support and guidance during our recent effort to ratify New START, end quote.
Yep, so he's admitting that an organization set up by a Soviet spy to gut the U.S. military basically has got him elected and has nurtured his political career and given him guidance all the way through.
And
that's
this guy that started the council, Leo Szilard.
Szilard has also been named as a Soviet, bona fide Soviet agent.
He became a prominent anti-nuclear campaigner. This led, you write, among other things, to a two-hour meeting with then-Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev in 1960, where he gained Khrushchev's assent to a Moscow-Washington hotline. What do you mean by hotline?
Well, it was a direct hotline between the leaders of the two countries. So basically, the president of the U.S. could talk to the president of whatever. So this basically gave the Soviets direct influence into the White House, a direct line into the White House.
Through Leo?
Through Leo Szilard, arranged that.
He arranged that hotline.
Yeah,
he arranged, set that up.
He got the Soviet assent for it, yeah.
So you go on to state, according to the Pro-Disarmament Pugwash Institute, quote, in 1962, Szilard founded the Council for Livable World to raise money for U.S. senators who favored arms control treaties. By Szilard's calculus, all states had two senators, so votes come cheapest by supporting campaigns in the least populous states. The council's first successful candidate was Senator George McGovern from South Dakota. Today, the council thrives by supporting candidates from all states and the House of Representatives as well. It is America's first political action committee for arms control and disarmament, end quote. And of course, the Soviets would love to have their agents here working with politicians to get us to disarm, which is why today, Dr. Peter Pry says in our documentary Siege, Dr. Peter Pry, executive director of the Congressional EMP Task Force, Dr. Peter Pry, who's been on Mark Levin for an hour on TV, Dr. Peter Pry, whose TV show we produce, Dr. Peter Pry, whose radio show we produce, Dr. Peter Pry, who's good friends with many people, is considered one of the excellent and foremost expert on EMP and many other issues, has sat at this desk and stated, as he did in Siege, we were following treaties, Russia was breaking them. The way that happens is by communist agents working through these political action committees, getting us to agree to these treaties. We then honor them, they break them, and now they've got it all over us militarily. Would come as a huge surprise to most Americans, because I always hear Americans say, oh, America's got the biggest and baddest military in the world. No one can bother us. And I'm like, really? And how many nuclear tipped missiles do we have? But this is how Russia gets it over on us. And if Ronald Reagan's idea was peace through strength, Russia's idea is dominance by weakness.
Yeah, they
want to weaken us.
Yeah, and they have done that. As we said before, they knew they couldn't challenge you in a trade war. They knew they couldn't challenge you militarily, but they could buy up your politicians to enact policies that worked in their favor. And that's exactly what they did with Joe Biden and Barack Obama. And I'll tell you two more people who are very, very close to the Council for a Livable World, who both attended their 50th anniversary celebrations, and that is Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, shocker.
Who both support the Green New Deal, which would absolutely gut the US military beyond even what Obama could have dreamed of. The Green New Deal is all about destroying the US military. And if you destroy the US military, who runs the world? It's Russia.
So communism, the Green New Deal is environmentalism masquerading. Let me put it this way. The Green New Deal is communism masquerading as environmentalism.
Yeah, it is. It's a watermelon strategy. It's red in the middle and green on the outside.
You state in your book, according to the Council for Livable World website, and cited in an article in 2008, they said this about themselves, quote, almost 50 years ago, Council for a Livable World pioneered a system for helping progressive congressional, by progressive they mean socialist.
Socialist, yeah.
Congressional candidates get elected office. Over the last 44 years, we have helped elect 113 U.S. arms control candidates to the Senate and 151 candidates to the House of Representatives. And that was 2008, so the number's higher
so
now.
They've elected a lot more. It's over 200 senators now.
This is what the Tennessean said. Reported, quote, when Joe Biden started running for a Senate seat in 1972, few people thought the young man from Delaware had a chance, but a well-placed Tennessee couple tagged him early as an up-and-comer. I was 29 years old, running for the United States Senate against a guy with an 81% favorable rating, a year where Richard Nixon won my state by over 65% of the vote. And I was an Irish Catholic in a state that had never elected one, Biden told Tennessee Democrats in a 2010 speech. Biden pulled off a stunning 3,162 vote upset, with a mix of youthful vigor, skillful campaigning, energized volunteers, and smart advertising, fueled by tens of thousands of dollars that a prominent Tennessee couple raised for his campaign. His candidacy caught the eye of former Tennessee Senator Albert Gore Sr., who was working with a Washington, D.C.-based arms control group called the Council for a Livable World.
It's all there. You can find it. But the media... hardly any conservatives in this country have even heard of the Council for a Livable World.
I never heard of it till yesterday.
It is the most influential organization in Washington, in my opinion, as far as foreign policy and arms control goes. They have destroyed so many U.S. military systems, canceled so many weapon systems, downgraded military budgets, negotiated bad treaties with your enemies. They've done more damage to the U.S. military than the Nazis ever did or the Japanese ever did in World War II, yet they are supporting your presidential candidates with no scrutiny to this day, right now.
And if
they're backing something like 10 senators in this upcoming election.
And if we had an FBI that was doing its job, none of this would have happened.
Exactly.
If we had a Congress that was doing its job, none of this would happen. And a lot of people that are now in powerful positions and on the verge of going to the White House would be in federal prison.
Exactly.
Correct?
No question.
And yet they went after and did a morning raid on a SWAT team on Roger Stone for process crimes and are looking to throw him to jail for, you know, the rest of his life, literally. I mean, can you believe what goes on in this country? I mean, it is a corrupt system.
It is. It is.
What are they finally going to do to get rid of you and me? I mean, our good friend Al Phil Haney, we still don't know what happened to him yet. Hopefully we'll find out. Yeah. But I mean, that could have been deep state. That could have been a random thing. We don't know what it was yet. But there are a lot of people over the years that have died very suspiciously because they talked too much and revealed too much. Yeah. And if they can't get you by hook, they'll get you by crook. The question is, if they can use the legal system to destroy people that speak the truth or they don't like politically, they can come after any of us.
They can. And you know what, Brandon? Doing what we're doing is dangerous. And you know the only thing that's more dangerous?
Not doing it.
Not doing it. And I say that to everybody who's watching today. You know, your country hangs in the balance. Your children's future hangs in the balance. Everything you believe in hangs in the balance. And you've been given a country because a few thousand brave patriots risked everything back in the 1700s to fight a war against a tyrant. You were given this huge gift. Well, now is the time everybody has got to take a stand. Mm. everybody's got to stand up, because it ain't just Trump. George Washington didn't win the Revolutionary War all by himself, and President Trump won't win the next election or clean up this country by himself either. He's giving us some guidance and some leadership, but now is the time to stand up.
You quote, again, in his excellent book, White House Reds, Communist, Socialist, and Security Risks Running for U.S. President 2020. And the thing is, all the history you're providing, like teaching us about the Council for a Livable World, you state that on June 21st, you're reading from an article, on June 21st, 1971, the Nashville Banner reported that Gore, that'd be Al Gore Sr., 6 months removed from the Senate, would become the Washington chairman of the Council for a Livable World, with advocates for decreasing the threat of nuclear weapons. Gore expects to spend much time in the next 18 months traveling across the country in behalf of 1972 Senate candidates for which the council is raising campaign money, the Banner reported in a short story. Nashville civil rights attorney George Barrett, who practiced law with both Albert and Pauline Gore in the early 1970s, said the couple saw in Biden a progressive, bright, hardworking young man, end quote. You state, the Council for Livable World's highly effective tactics is to explicitly seek long-shot candidates to fund so it can lean on them later to help with its goal of disarming the United States. John Isaacs, a senior fellow at the Council for Livable World, spelled this strategy out in his 2013 eulogy to his predecessor, Massachusetts-based socialist Jerome Grossman. Quote, now this is them saying, this is their own words from your book. You quote their own words. Quote, now, as an aside, we have a dictum of Council for a Livable World. If we support a candidate in his or her first major political contest, he or she will always remember who was with them at the beginning. That has been true with such political figures, he says modestly, as President Barack Obama and Vice President Joseph Biden. They remember who was with them when they launched their political careers. And that's why it was so nice to see a tweet from Vice President Biden after Jerry's death. He was a good friend who worked tirelessly to advance U.S. security through nuclear arms control, end quote, is what Biden tweeted.
Yes, yeah, so it's all there in their own words. And the what makes it serious, what brings it together, you can prove the deep connection between the Council for a Livable World and Biden. They've guided him his entire way. And when you find out that Al Gore Sr. was the protege of a Soviet agent, and the Council for a Livable World was set up by another Soviet agent with the explicit purpose of disarming America so the Soviets would win the next war, it all falls into place.
Well, and in our next broadcast, we're going to talk about Armand Hammer, who is all tied into this.
Yeah, Armand Hammer was the man behind this, you know, the leading Soviet agent of the early 20th century. You know, the guy who kept the Bolshevik Revolution from basically collapsing. You imagine, had he not done that and the Bolshevik Revolution had collapsed, how much happier the 20th century would have been.
Here's what Biden says. You write, Biden was certainly obligated. Quote, here's the deal, writes Biden. I was desperately trying to raise money. I got a call from a woman named Pauline Gore. Would that be Al Gore Sr.'s wife?
Yes.
Al Gore Jr.'s mother?
Yes.
Would I come down to Washington and meet with her and Senator Gore and some concerned scientists who wanted to talk about the spread of nuclear weapons? It was an outfit called the Council for a Livable World, end quote, Biden said in a 2010 speech in Nashville. So, according to Tennessean, quote, so I showed up in Senator Gore's apartment in the Methodist House, which was a catty corner from the Supreme Court. I sat there and it basically was an interview. I didn't realize it. Senator Gore, who had left the Senate 2 years earlier, said, I'm going to help you, end quote. So Biden, said Joe Biden, quote, so if you want to blame anybody for my being a United States senator elected 7 times and vice president, it's all the fault of former Senator Al Gore. That'd be Al Gore Sr., Al Gore, the former vice president's father.
Yeah.
It's worth remembering that Al Gore Sr. was himself the fault of a very rich man named Armand Hammer, the longtime head of Occidental Petroleum. According to espionage expert Edward J. Epstein, quote, in 1950, Hammer made Gore a partner in a cattle breeding business from which the senator made a substantial profit. Sounds like something Hillary Clinton did at one time, right? Therefore, thereafter, Gore was Hammer's designated door opener in the official Washington. When Mr. Gore retired, Hammer made him president of Occidental's coal division, where he earned more than $500,000 a year. Well, he wasn't very green, was he?
Well, no, he wasn't. And that's money in 1950s terms. It's a lot of money.
$500,000 in 1950s is big money. Soon, son Al next put the family's Senate seat at Hammer's service. At the 1981 inauguration of Ronald Reagan, Junior Gore, managed for Hamner to be seated in a section reserved for senators. Hamner lurked in the doorway, hoping to glad hand the president, but Mr. Reagan brushed by him without a glance, and with reason. Years earlier, Alexander D. Marchechis, the head of French intelligence, had warned Reagan that Hamner was a Soviet agent of influence, end quote. Let me make sure what people are saying here. You're saying that Armour Hammer, Al Gore Jr., had Hammer at the 1981 inauguration of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And that he, Hammer, positioned himself to shake the hand of the new president. And Ronald Reagan brushed by him without even paying attention because he had been warned by a French agent earlier on that Hammer was a Soviet agent.
That's exactly right. See, Hammer actually joined the Republican Party later. He was trying to get influence through the GOP, but he was a Soviet agent. And then later on, it says that the FBI was going to move on Armand Hammer, but Al Gore Sr., persuaded J. Edgar Hoover not to move on him, not to prosecute him.
And you state on page 11, Democrat presidential candidate Joe Biden owes his political career to the Council for a Livable World, an organization created by alleged Soviet agent Leo Salad, supported by money from Al Gore Sr., who in turn was funded by the Soviet Union's best friend in the United States, Armand Hammer.
Yeah. And Joe Biden has been one of the leading proponents of U.S. disarmaments, gutting your weapon systems, canceling weapon systems, defunding your military, working with the Soviet Union, working for detente, and basically betraying the country to the Soviet Union. And he's the moderate in the race.
And folks, have you ever heard of the Council for a Livable World? I hadn't until I read his book last night. It's called White House Reds. It just came out today. We have the first interview since it came out. Got my copy signed. You can get your copy signed by ordering it at trevorlowden.com, trevorlowden.com, or off Amazon. But if you want him to sign it, you can get it from his website. Folks, this is the second of several programs. Again, if you appreciate what we're doing, the way these programs are made possible is through your tax-deductible support at wvwfoundation.com. So please go to wvwfoundation.com, make a tax-deductible contribution today. You can also find our mailing address on the screen and send a check if you prefer. We spend $3,000 a month in streaming and storage to give you programs like this. We are listener-supported. The second way you can support us is by joining our VIP club, where we archive all our radio shows, TV shows, ebooks, audiobooks, transcripts, and more. Over 1,000 TV shows like this on demand. If you go to wvwtv.com/subscription and join our VIP subscription club, where all these shows eventually roll into, if you go there and join at the 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year rate, I'm going to send you my documentary, Sabotage, 6 hours. I'm going to send that to you for free, along with my book, Marxianity. I'll send you the book and the documentary free as my way of saying thank you for supporting us by getting a 1 year, 2 year, or 3 year membership at wvwtv.com/subscription, where we have over 1,000 TV shows like this archived, along with thousands of TV shows, ebooks, audiobooks, transcripts, and more. wvwtv.com/subscription. It's vital we hear from you so we can keep putting out programming like this. In addition, we've had to increase our security over the last few months due to many things that have been going on. And so to afford those security increases at our studios, again, we need your support. Please go there right now and join wvwtv.com/subscription if you want to join, or make a tax-deductible contribution by online or mail, wvwfoundation.com. Next broadcast, Program 3 with our guest, Trevor Loudon, author of White House Reds. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Thanks for watching. Take care.